Welcome, Capital Risers. On today's show, Jared Ash came on and talked shop with me about a number of topics, including establishing trust with investors, setting and reverse engineering cash flow goals, multi-generational legacy wealth creation, and morning rituals to help capital raising. Are you guys ready to raise? If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or hire me as a coach, use the scheduling link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Risers Show episode 256, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got Jared Ash on the Capital Risers Show. Welcome, brother. How you doing this morning?
I'm great. How are you, man?
Ready to go and hit the world. Very excited to have a very special guest. I believe we met through Melanie McDaniel. Is that correct? She's got a mastermind. Or did we meet somewhere else? Yeah.
That or another group, but that's where we got to become friends, through Melanie.
Yeah, Melanie's fantastic, dude. So how about we start with this, man? Capital Risers Show Season 3, brought to you by my friends at PitchDecks.com. Tell us a little bit about your background, man. How did you get into this thing called real estate and syndication?
Yeah, so I started with single family home investing, like a lot of people in the space, and then jumped up to syndication because I had some cash flow goals in mind. And to hit my cash flow goals, I realized that when I did the math, that it would, at the rate I was buying single family homes, it would take me like 17 years to hit it. So it's nice. I enjoy those single family homes, but I wanted to scale up. And I looked at what are my skill sets, and that is relationship building,
nice,
capital raising, where I have some experience. And it led me into studying this field. And then we built Crown Capital as I got to meet my partners over just a year or 2 years of networking, and they're great people and all complement each other and fill in for each other's weaknesses. So just always had a passion for real estate. The guy who was the best man at my wedding had a number of houses and condos in DC. When DC was bad, slowly becoming a lot better of a town to live in. Most people lived on the outskirts of DC. And he was very successful at developing cash flow for himself and long-term tenants. And then I had a cousin that lives in LA, and he was investing out of state into single family homes. So I had two good mentors in the space that showed me how to move forward.
Apprentice style mentors, right? They weren't like people that you paid money to.
Yeah, they were just friends who were successful in it and encouraged me to start figuring it out.
All right. You mentioned cash flow goals. What were they? Curious.
So I looked at two things that I wanted to do. One is own a second home in Tahoe. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. And nice. So I mapped out how to pay for the mortgage and utility bills, house cleaning, everything that went into it, including, you mentioned snowboarding, season passes for the ski slopes during the winter time every year. Mm-hmm. So I needed to have cash flow, do all of that, as well as I wanted to like create a base to eventually pay my like mortgage and property taxes for my primary residence as well. So my first goal and my second goal down.
How long does it take you to get from San Francisco to Tahoe driving?
Depends on the day and time. It could be anywhere from, well, I'm in the suburbs east now, so a little closer to Tahoe. So from my house, it could be anywhere from 3 hours to 5, depending
on
traffic.
That's not bad.
From San Francisco, if you left at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday, you could be there by like 12:15, 12:30 in the morning. But if you left anytime between 1 o'clock on a Friday and 8 o'clock on a Friday, you'd still be there at 12:15.
So. Dude, Tahoe is sick. It's beautiful. I've been to Heavenly once or twice. All right, cool, dude. So you reverse engineered your cash flow goals, and then you mentioned some capital raising experience. What was that?
So during the day, I still have a consulting practice in the government affairs and lobbying space. And I keep that because I believe it balances out real estate for my investors, that we, myself and my team, don't have to do a deal just for the next acquisition fee or just to show we're doing a deal. We do a deal because we truly believe in it and it's long-term wealth and not about a paycheck immediately. And so in that government affairs space along the way, I have for 20 plus years in it, I raised a lot of money working on political campaigns, consulting with nonprofit organizations, state ballot initiatives, people in both parties that and good causes that we worked for, where I raised money. Now the difference is as one investor told me, hey, instead of calling me about a losing candidate, you're telling me how you can get me 10% cash on cash every month for my investment. He's like, now I'm intrigued. Let's keep talking.
Interesting. Okay, so raising for political campaigns. Did you mention also some charity? Raising for charity?
Yeah, nonprofits, think tanks, activist groups. Yep.
These are all very different versions of raising capital. It reminds me of talking with Ellis Hammond too, because he used to raise money for church. And that's a very different style of capital raising than for real estate. Much harder, I think. I did just a little bit of work for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society back in the day. And I had a list of people that had previously donated and I cold called them. I mean, they were kind of somewhat warm because they had previously donated money. It was very challenging for me. I was still a kid back then. I guess I was in my mid-20s. What's been your experience as a difference between raising for political campaigns versus for charity versus for real estate?
I'll start by telling you what's similar, then maybe it'll lead into what's different. But okay. I think there are some similarities. One, it's about relationships and building trust. It's not about a transaction. I mean, if somebody's just replying to an email and donating because they like this presidential candidate, that's exciting. But most people who are donating larger sums are doing it because they want to meet a candidate, they believe in something, a cause, a nonprofit that they believe in, but they want to know you. They want to know that their money is going to good use. If they're going to put $100,000 into a charity, they want to know what that's going for, that it's not just going to salaries, that you're running good programs. So it's building relationships. It's listening to what is their vision. It's building trust for those items and hearing things out. It's the same thing in real estate. You want to get to know your investors. You want to build their trust and you want to hear what are their needs. I was talking to one guy recently that was in his 80s. And he said, I want to be out of every deal in 2 to 3 years. I don't want a 5-year or a 7-year hold. And when you ask him why, he's like, I might not be here that long. And that was just his outlook. And he said, well, I'm probably going to live 10 or 15 more years, but just in case, I want to be out of the deal as quickly as I can. And I want cash flow. And that's what's important. And so understanding what's important to him versus understanding what's important to a person who's 35 and trying to buy their first house and just had their first kid. You got to just listen to them and know what's important to them and be able to educate them along the way about that. And the other thing I would say is you also have to not be afraid to ask. And so many people in the space are just afraid to ask for $100,000 or say, hey, you did $100,000. We're at the end of our capital call. We're just short. Can you do 25 more so we can wrap this up? You've got to have the courage and the faith to do that. I would say those are the similarities. I would say that a big difference with it is there's something people believe in. Hey, I got to look at my investment portfolio. I got to know how this fits in. I got to talk to my advisor. The other things are much more heartfelt.
Yeah, there's a mixing of philosophies around capital raising. Some people will say, hey, like Benny Chopra likes to say, don't ever ask people for cash, just present an opportunity. Some other people like Dustin Hendrickson will say, yeah, when it's time to raise capital, I get into sales mode or capital raising mode and start making phone calls and asking for the money. And other people will say, hey, just go out and make friends and create the relationships. And that's the important part. For the people that do, and then I'm thinking right now of Keely Hubbard. I don't know if you've ever met or heard about her, but she has a background in sales. And I heard this statistic, I think very recently, that she closes 90% of the people that she talks to into the syndications, which seems like an absurdly high number. So I'm sure that there's something more than meets the eye there. I'm interested in kind of exploring this, though, because you're talking about actually calling, and this is what I've been doing for the last couple of days, because we're in the middle of a few capital raises, trying to close a couple of land deals that we're going to build subdivisions on. And it is kind of weird feeling calling and asking, even if you're not calling directly to an LP, but you have co-GPs that you are working with, and you want to give them a little push. Hey, go get your guys to, where are they at? Let's get some money across the finish line so we can take this thing down. It's going to be very lucrative. What are your feelings on these different concepts?
Well, you threw a lot out there.
Yeah.
I would say I'm never just asking somebody for $100,000. Everybody that we are reaching out to are people that we have talked to in the past, whether in the last month, the last...
Let's assume that we're talking to people that we have long-term relationships with.
I think you're right. It goes back to, we talk to them about this is the opportunity and why we think this is a good opportunity for them, why it fits into their goals. We have to understand what are their goals, what are they looking for, and how this fits into them. But I'm never a hard pressure sales guy. If it doesn't work for them, okay, tell me what works for you. What's the next deal? Okay, the timing doesn't work on this one. Great. And in the last year, there's a ton of people who have just wanted to sit on the sideline and leave their money in the bank or day trade because there's been this war in Ukraine. There's like high spiking inflation. There's all this political unrest and gas prices. I have a minivan and I filled up yesterday for $67. I was filling up this summer for over $100. Like that has an impact on how you feel about your money. Like when you're filling up twice a week, that's another $66 more we're talking about. Like it impacts your decisions on financial. So a lot of people have sat out and you just have to be patient with them and call them back and say 6 months later, hey, you're still sitting on the sidelines. What has your money done for you? This is what the stock market money has done for you. This is what I can do for you.
Depending on which vehicle I'm using, going up to my closest snowboarding is about 2 hours and 30 minutes away. And it can be $100 or maybe $80 or $70, depending on which car I take or truck I take. If you're doing that two or three times a week during season, man, that adds up. So I definitely can understand that. Okay, cool, man. So let's chat it up a little bit more about your business model. What was your first syndication? When did that happen?
About a year ago now, we closed 134 units in Houston. That building is not only an added value, but it is a reposition. It is going from like a C-minus property to a B-plus property. So we are going in and pulling out cabinets and putting in new bedroom doors and new front doors. And we're really redoing everything from the pool deck and furniture, just making it look clean, new siding, just because the market where it is located has evolved in the last decade or so. And there's just a lot of good opportunity to make this a nice place to live.
Is this going to be your business model and your team going forward?
No, I would say our two most recent deals, one in Lubbock and one in Louisville, are more cash flowing deals. They are light added values, but they are cash flowing out of the gate. At the 6 month mark, we will start paying investors in once a month. I think that's more going to be our model, is how do we create instant cash flow at some level? So at the 6 month mark, we're putting checks into the investor's pocket. And that goes back to my personal goals, which we talked about, were cash flow, cash flow, cash flow, how to increase my monthly amount.
And then going into the future, what's your whole time frame that you expect on these deals?
I think with interest rates and everything, things have been fluctuating a bit. Our general philosophy is 5 years, but some we're looking at 3 years, some we're looking at 7 years. And there's even one that's an 18 unit that we're looking at for 10 years. Because we could pay investors back on that one, their initial principal in 3 years, and we'll just create infinite returns and just constant cash flow before we decide to cash out and sell it. And that's because we believe we can get enough equity in a refinance to do that. But I would say generally we start with 5-year assumptions and see where the market is. A lot of changes going on in the market right now.
Yeah, I have a friend on LinkedIn that was talking about tangible versus intangible. I think it was Maricela Soberanas. And she was talking about there's two types of legacy wealth that you can leave to your children. One of them is actual money, and another one is like knowledge and skills. You have three little girls that are growing up. What do you prefer to leave them? Or is it a combination of both? What do you see? Like, you just want to leave them money and let them do whatever they want? Or do you want to teach them how to manage it as well?
Well, that's great. I guess I've never like articulated that before. I guess I never think about leaving them. I think about each day in their lives. And one thing I talk about is I want them just to be able to have enough money right now to experience the life I want, choose the college that they want. I don't want it to be about, can you do gymnastics, tennis, and art? No, you can do whatever you want to explore right now. And I want to have that kind of money to be able to do that. I want to be able to travel the world. And if they want to go to a school that's slightly more expensive in college, then I'd like to be able to do that. I do believe in teaching them the value of money. A holiday present this year is Monopoly Junior as a starting point. Just to start doing it. And we always count piggy bank money and we talk about it. We spin tops and trade pennies and things like that versus M&Ms. And it's just to start, mine are little. So it's just to get them into the concept of the value of a buck.
Very interesting. Let's go back into goals. How do you approach your goals? I think it sounded like you reverse engineered what you needed in order to accomplish what you wanted to do. But when it comes to life in general, emotional, relational goals, how do you approach that? Are you one of these meditators in the morning? Do you write stuff down? Do you have an intention statement or a goal statement or anything like that?
Yeah. So I would check out The Miracle Morning.
Yeah.
By Hal Elrod. That's a great series of how to start. And I start my morning early, generally around 5:30. And I do affirmations. I've worked on two pages of affirmations. One is a story page of what my life will look like in 2 to 5 years. And the other one is just telling myself key things and beliefs about money. And it's all about that mindset. And then I do a gratitude journal and nice. I exercise. I find that the better time for me for meditation is sort of towards the middle to the end of the day, when I just need to settle down my mind, compress everything from the day and everything that I find in the morning. That's what works for me. Hal Elrod in Miracle Morning will tell you to meditate in the morning.
So that is a topic that I really love to kind of explore, because there's so many misnomers and misconceptions about what meditation is and what versions of meditations you can do. So like, I love daydream meditation. I love active meditation. When I'm snowboarding, I feel like that's a form of passive where I'm shutting off the mind from what's going on in Phoenix and my business because I'm focused on avoiding trees and stuff. However, I've also done yoga nidra. I've done guided meditations. I've done hypnotherapy. I've done NLP. What are your preferred methods? Like when you say that there's certain times of the day that I like to meditate or that you like to meditate, what kind of practice do you do, just out of curiosity?
I'm probably not the best out of all of them. I would say meditation, I'm not the example for. I find the number one way for me to sort of get that flow to do that, like you said, with snowboarding, when I'm swimming laps, when I'm going for a run or out for a bike ride, a lot of times I'm not thinking about anything and my mind is calm. And I love to go for a long bike ride and just see different places in the scenery. There's a mountain near my house that I could just ride up, and occasionally I'll see a deer or a coyote, or I'll look back and see the view. And I don't always make it to the top because, hey, life, I got to get back. Like, oh, it's 5:30 in the morning and now it's like 7. I got to get my kids ready for school or and do a conference call or Zoom. And I find that space when you jump into a pool and you're swimming laps and you're just focused on getting to the next side and putting one arm into another, that to me does that mentally and gets me ready to start the day. And I love doing that stuff in the morning. What I find in the afternoon or evenings is it just is, I use Headspace, an app on my phone, and I do a couple of minutes of journaling. The journaling gets like the thoughts out of my head. And when I use Headspace app, it's just about calming down really from a stressful moment, a stressful day, and taking those deep breaths.
So cool. All right. So talk to us a little bit more on the capital raising side. What are you doing to educate and nurture your database and your friends and your, you know, the people that you're connected with? Do you have a social media presence or a newsletter, or what are you doing to stay front and center in front of your people and stay consistently communicating with them?
We have a social media presence. I am big personally on LinkedIn. And using LinkedIn, we use Crown Capital. Our firm has Facebook and Instagram and all of that. Personally, I use LinkedIn a lot. to the others, use Facebook, use Reels, use Instagram very often. And a lot of our posts that are on LinkedIn will put in multiple places. So you could find me on LinkedIn, Jared Ash, ASCH. I'm the only one there, so I'm easy to find. We do a monthly newsletter. We've done a monthly webinar with a speaker. We are going to weekly webinars.
That's been amazing for me, the webinars. January.
Yeah. Educational webinars, guest speaker, and we're tackling everything from, it's really an education course for our investors going forward. It's designed to say, there's once a month, we're going to do a mindset. So in January, of course, at the beginning of the year, we're going to do goal setting. And we're going to talk about how you should have a mindset of an investor. It goes back to those affirmations I was talking about doing. But then we have a 2-month program where we're talking on 6 topics of how you can do real estate through retirement accounts and take the long-term advantages and do retirement planning through real estate investing. But then the next section is tax benefits related to it. And we'll have in not one, but 4 guest speakers about that. Then we'll have financial advisors come in and talk about life insurance and do things. And that's what we're going to be doing in 2023, which we think we're doing. And then we're going to create not only the once a week webinars, but for people who can't attend, those will be available on replay. Those will be available on a podcast and a YouTube channel. And it's really about educating our investors in ways and getting feedback for them and tailoring our audience. So, I know a lot of wealthy people, some invest in real estate. Most of them do not.
What do they invest in?
Your typical stocks, or maybe they'll invest in somebody's business, but it's more of a friend thing, or they got a hot tip on this day trade that they'll do or something like that. I know some of them that have single family homes have never done this, but most haven't done real estate. And the thought of a syndication where you could own a share of an apartment building, that concept is very hard for people. They think real estate is rich. You have to be a large developer and own not one apartment building, but you've got to own 100 apartment buildings, right? That you could own a share of 130 doors or 80 doors or something like that.
It's a foreign concept for sure.
And get cash flow from that? How many stocks are given cash flow anymore? Less and less.
I don't really know anything about stocks, except for it's a roller coaster ride for the most part. I have been running because I've been spending some time with Richard Wilson at his family office club. And I do run across some people that are very hardcore into stocks and like day trading, or they're like securities licensed professionals that only deal in equities. And they sound pretty interesting in terms of their ability to speak on laws and all kinds of things. And at the end of the day, when they say something like, I don't invest in real estate at all, it really throws up some red flags for me. But sometimes I don't even want to try and convince them otherwise, because I already know, like, internally, my belief system is real estate is the way to go. I've always loved it. We'll always love it. So I just kind of move on, because there's plenty of other fish in the sea that are not going to be so resistant to the concept. Yeah.
Well, and when you talked about the business model, that's why we're going to really focus on 23 in cash flow, because most people can understand cash flow. And if you could start sending them a check once a month, once a quarter, even if it's $10, right? Hopefully it's usually a lot more than $10. But if you're giving them something in their bank account, they see and feel that.
Yes.
If somebody goes and buys 1,000 shares of Disney or GE or Facebook, none of them are Tesla. None of those are giving out anything in terms of a dividend of cash flow. You're really betting on where is the long term of that company going. I think GE and Disney I use because they do pay dividends. And I'm pulling up my Disney statement. I think they paid 4 cents in the last year on, that might be between more than one share. That might be between my whole portfolio. So it's not like it's nothing. It's really about their value of that stock when I go to sell it. Cash flow in real estate gives you cash flow and tax benefits.
So I'm curious about the team infrastructure. Who's in place? What are you guys' roles?
Yeah, we have 4 members at Crown Capital. My job is to build relationships with investors, be talking to people, get to know them long term, and be a resource. I help out in lots of other areas, like going through the financial plan. Which lender are we going to accept? Participating in due diligence, we all do that. I then have Parnell Noel focuses on finding the next deal. His job is to network with brokers, find and identify the opportunity, and to do the underwriting on the deal and help lead the due diligence team on the ground on a property. You have Tiffany Spann. Tiffany also works with a lot of investors. She writes our newsletters, runs our operations. She makes sure that we are running a smooth ship as a company. And that's her biggest strength, but she is also great at connecting with investors. And Lupe, also another one, she's great at connecting with investors. She runs our social media stuff, but we all contribute in asset management for the properties we own. We all contribute in due diligence. We all bring multiple other things to the table, but we all have strengths and weaknesses at doing it. And I'm grateful for all of them. And there's a famous Jim Rohn quote that's, you are the sum of five people you spend the most time with. Those are three of mine, and I am grateful for them. I learn so much from them every week, and I know I am getting smarter and wealthier each week for being part of the team, and I hope I bring that value to them as well.
Yeah, that quote gets thrown around quite a bit on LinkedIn. I really love LinkedIn. There's just so many positive people on there. I'm in the middle of the Yonah Weiss challenge, so I want to give him a shout out real quick, man. What he has us do in those challenges has been fantastic for getting my brain to start understanding how to become creative and get engagement and foster relationships. So wanted to give him a quick shout out. I wanted to ask you one last question before we go into the lightning round, which is specifically around your sales funnel. So somebody goes and signs up for one of your webinars, and what happens then in the sales funnel? Do they receive a sequence of automated emails, or do you guys follow up with them? What do you do with the list of people that sign up for your webinar? Just curious.
Yeah, generally, if they sign up for a webinar and we've never had a conversation with them, we do a process to track them down and do a phone call. But we're not so aggressive in that like, hey, if you want to just keep attending webinars, great. But we really like to get to know our investors. Going back to that, those two examples I said earlier, the guy who's in his 80s and retired and the person who's in their mid 30s with a kid and starting out, but they both want to invest for different reasons. I want to understand what's important to them and everybody in between. It's got to be a deal that works for them. And I want to know that before we get the deal. What can I bring them? What value can I add to them before I get to them and ask them to support us for the next deal? We have to get to know you. And then past that, we want to keep providing content. And I'll say, like, I know a ton of other people. If you looked at my LinkedIn, I have 7,300, I think, connections as of today. Not all of those are people in real estate. Maybe 1,000 are. But a lot of them come from my long-term career, from other places in my life. And I am working to reach out to many of them to bring them in and educate them. I also do this real estate stuff. I'm now doing this real estate stuff, right? Come and learn about it. Come join me for a webinar. Build that trust the same way you've trusted me for other things in the real estate space that we are going to bring you that cash flow that we've talked about.
Good stuff, dude. All right. Fantastic. Let's jump into the lightning round. My first question to you is, what is the best vacation you have ever taken?
I think it was 2 months in South America. I remember working on a campaign and a season had come and gone and lost, and you were unemployed then. And so I skipped the country and I started in Peru, went through Bolivia, Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, Chile, Brazil. That was just so much fun, so beautiful. And just to get the time to meet so many new people and not worry about when you're coming back or where you're going tomorrow night. Like, that was just a great experience.
I love it. What's your favorite book of any kind?
Favorite book. I just gave a shout out to The Miracle Morning. I really liked that. Any kind on mindset. Just read 3 Feet from Gold from the Napoleon Hill Foundation. Just sort of talks about perseverance and don't give up. And I'm a big fan of that.
What is your secret getaway? Where do you go when you want to get away?
Lake Tahoe, which we were talking about earlier. Like, to get there a couple hours away. Great in the summer to go hiking, just so beautiful. Winter, the skiing, the snow. It's just amazing there.
So beautiful. Fresh air, fresh water. Very clean. I love the respect that they pay to that lake and keeping it very clean at all times. All right. Yep. What is it? Keep Tahoe blue? Is that the slogan? All right. How long do you want to live?
I don't have an age, but I think I've talked about before. I have 3 little girls. I'd like to get to know my grandchildren and see them grow up a little bit. But past that, I want to be healthy. I always want to keep walking around. I want to be doing things. I just don't want to be an old man sitting in a chair all day being a burden.
So we were talking about affirmations earlier. I just want to mention to the audience that's listening, however you imagine yourself being at an old age is probably what you're going to manifest. So you're going to start wanting to think about being healthy and walking around at that old time of your life. I guarantee you that the people that have the best quality of life have been doing that. So you may want to consider that is my invitation to you. All right, next question. Where do you want to travel to that you've never been to?
I think I'd like to get over to Eastern Europe a little bit.
Oh, I love
that. Croatia, Montenegro, Budapest, Prague. I think that would be a fun experience. And I'd love to do an African safari.
Cool. I recommend Lake Balaton if you go to Hungary. It's a fantastic place. So short answer on this, best way to raise capital from your perspective?
Build relationships.
Yeah. All right. How about this? Do you have any hacks for breaking through your limiting beliefs?
Get an accountability partner. Somebody that can boost your confidence each week, but hold you accountable and keep you real to things. And then read books. Don't find a guru. Read books about mindset and belief. And I've come from limiting beliefs and I'm getting over those and looking ahead. And so
here's a question that my partner, Andy McMullen, posed to me when he interviewed me. When was the last time you felt like a loser?
I think at some point during COVID, when it first started and we didn't know what we were doing, and my oldest was in kindergarten then and she was crying because she wanted to go to school. And I'm in California where we were very shut down early in the process. My boss cut my paycheck. Not that we didn't have money in the bank. He just cut it because he thought he should to save for the long term. And I think that time really empowered me to then step up my real estate investing and reach out to more people and really learn about it, because I didn't like that. I didn't like not being in control of things, especially financial.
Next question. What do you love best about being a triathlete?
I've done 2 Ironman. I just did Escape from Alcatraz this past summer. That water's cool. For me, I think it's a couple things. One is getting away. And like we talked about, that mindset, just clearing your mind and taking a long bike ride and enjoying the sights and not be thinking about everything else and getting that flow. And then the people, just a great culture around triathletes and how you work together.
Love that answer. Okay. What do you love best about being a dad to 3 Disney princesses?
Watching their imagination and just how they could see life through their eyes. And I would tell everybody to be able to look through little kids' eyes at how the world can be so great, their vision of life.
That's fantastic. I believe that we all have an inner child. Next question. We're starting to get a little bit deeper here. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I believe so, because there's 2 beliefs. One is to always give back. And the other one, which also goes with that, is community. And that community teaches me to build those relationships that have made me successful in my career and to continue to do that. And one of our philosophies is we're running this whole education course and helping to talk to people. I want to know what their goals are, because that's me giving back. I want to know how I can help people become wealthy and make their money work for them. And that ties into that community belief that my religion has.
Well done. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
I can't say that I have.
And last question, brought to you by Shanna Amigo. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I'd like to leave it a slightly better place than it was before I was here, or in my own wake of everything. I'd love to leave my girls happy and their families happy. I'd love to be able to say I've made a difference. So when I pass and Ruben's living to 150, you could say that guy, Jared, he was a great guy. I remember him because of him, X. And if I could do that, then I've left a good impact on the world.
That's beautiful. Very cool answers on the lightning round. All right, man. So quick shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star review and shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and our sponsor, Syndication Pro at Family Office Club and PitchDecks.com. Go to check out their offers at CapitalRaiserShow.com. Jared, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Jared, J-A-R-E-D, Ash, A-S-C-H. I am on there and I'm very easy to find and very active. So you could just message me or add me as a friend there.
Very cool. And then do you have any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they scale on their journey?
Be patient and build those relationships for the long term.
Fantastic. All right, cool, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming back on the show. It's been a great time getting to know you over the last couple of years, and I look forward to following your progress, man. Thanks again.